Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
What's so great about silences? Personally, I love filling them with words, like we're gonna do now, guys. Hello! Welcome to Spoiler-filled Film Conversation, hooray! I'm Richard. With me, to stop there being a great silence, is Jamie.
Were you working on that the whole time you were watching the film?
I wrote that before I'd know. I'm just really great at awkwardly ad-libbing things, sharp.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, that's Jamie's voice. And also on the podcast is Abby.
Hello.
And taking a vow of silence this week is Anthony, because it's appropriate to the film, slash Jamie cut his throat, slash he had technical difficulties once again, and couldn't join us, at least not consistently enough to do the podcast.
I shot my thumbs off.
In fairness, he did shoot Jamie's thumbs off, so bit of a tete-a-tete going on, all super relevant to the film that we haven't discussed yet, which is this week, chosen by me, and it is The Great Silence, and I'm going to be silent. I'm going to stop making silent jokes now. I'm going to pass to Abby so she can clarify what the film is and who made it. Abigail.
Hello. This is The Great Silence from 1968. It was directed by Sergio Corbucci. It was written by him as well as Vitriano Petrilli, Mario Amendola, Bruno Corbucci, and Sergio Corbucci again.
Okay.
It stars Jean-Louis Trintignant, Klaus Kinski, Frank Wolf, Luigi Pastilli, and Mario Brega.
What was that first one again, Abby?
Jean-Louis Trintignant is what I went
Sure. Well,
with.
he was whoever he was, he was in it.
It's about a mute gunfighter who defends a young widow and a group of outlaws against a gang of bounty killers in the winter of 1898 as a grim, tense struggle unfolds.
In snowy Utah. Yes, is a spaghetti western, meaning, some Italians made it, and it's like, features actors from different parts of the world. And yeah, if you don't know what a spaghetti western is, I don't have fucking time to unwrap film history for you. Just get with the program. Anyway, don't be so arrogant.
Wow.
Needlessly, I just brought it up and then just instantly started slagging off the hypothetical listener. Sorry. Anyway, so yes, it's a spaghetti western. One of the reasons, I guess it came to mind, is everyone in the world at the start of 2019 and the end of 2018 has probably been either telling you about or playing Red Dead Redemption 2. So yeah, it's been a lot. A lot of people have been living the life of a cowboy in the Old West via their computer, and I was one of those people. And I was like, oh, I feel like watching a Western movie. And then this was one of the films, as along with many others, that inspired some of the elements of Red Dead Redemption 2. But also, I quite like the film Hateful Eight, and I also like the film Django Unchained, which, Tarantino made. And you could see, especially Hateful Eight, you could see some of the things he lovingly recrafted or stole or was influenced by, however you perceive Tarantino. Like, but anyway, I like Tarantino, I like Red Dead Redemption. And I like spaghetti westerns generally. I hadn't seen this one before. Well, I watched it before we did the pod. Anyway, the first time I watched it, I was just, oh, I should watch this. I haven't seen this one. And I liked the snowy setting. There's like a nice contrast to all the other desert-based westerns. And I thought I'd give it a go. And I ended up quite enjoying it. But I thought there were certain elements of it that I wanted to share with other people and have a little chat about, so that's why I picked it. Knowing that I liked spaghetti westerns, I suspected I might enjoy The Great Silence with its reputation, but there you go. That was my reason and what I was expecting out of it. So you guys have watched it, but what were you expecting, Abby?
I didn't know anything about it except that you'd seen it and you'd liked it. You did mention to me that it was very cheap.
Sure.
Or at least cheap looking, I should say.
Well, it's well shot, though, like, considering.
Yeah. So in that sense, I was prepared for the little Western that could.
Yeah, it's the weird thing with 60s and 70s Italian, you know, directors making Westerns. They didn't have as much budget to work with as big Hollywood, like, you know, John Ford or whoever. Big Hollywood John Ford, that's what his friends call him. You know, so they beg, borrow and steal and throw together a film, and sometimes, especially because they dub them, and it's the technology just, I don't know, the dubbing is one of the things with it that is, like, odd. We'll get into why, I guess. But yeah, it's definitely a little cheap around the edges, but I, you know, better than a lot of cheap Westerns I've seen. I've seen some really, even modern day cheap Westerns are like, fucking hell, guys, what are you doing? This is a shit show. But, yeah, you know, you expected it to be a little bit, you know, spaghetti, yeah?
Hmm.
Is it your sort of thing, usually, the Western? Is it a genre you love, or is it something you could, you know, give or take?
It's very era dependent, because there was a point where Westerns were manly. They were very masculine things.
A man with a white hat walks into a town and saves them all with his gun.
Yes. And you have to like John Wayne to like a certain period of Westerns, because he was in all of them.
He was in quite a heap, yeah. Not my cup of tea, John Wayne. He's all right in some things. But I'm more of a Clint Eastwood guy. And obviously this isn't the Clint Eastwood film, but it's, you know, it's the same era, same race of directors. same first name, Sergio, right? No?
Oh yeah. I didn't think same composer too, it's Ennio Morricone did the music for this.
So I'm not being racist. It's the same if you thumb through the little book of cult westerns, it'll be in there alongside like The Good, the Bad, the Ugly and so forth. Anyway, it's got a reputation as a cult film before I'd mentioned it. I didn't make the cult happen.
The director is the director, and the lead actor was the guy in it as well, who made Django.
Yeah.
Which is one of the ones that's like held up, which I haven't seen, but is held up as very influential, and obviously where Tarantino got influence from, you know.
Yeah, like the original Django, as you say, with the same actor in and maker and so forth. Yeah, like Django is really good. And again, in the same sort of sloppy, like old, cheap, but still good. It's very violent. I mean, this film was violent as well, but Django is like, I've got a machine gun in a coffin, guys. Of course it's going to be violent. So, like, Django is good, and this guy is charismatic as Django. But I'm not good. I don't want to be comparing the two. I'll take this alone. But Jamie, you've been living in little Red Dead Redemption world, haven't you, as well as me?
Yes, it turns out that the life of a cowboy involves a lot of carrying bags of grain around and chopping wood.
You're thinking of Minecraft, aren't you? Like we're
chopping. No, it's I have enjoyed, you know, I paid full price for Red Dead Redemption 2 to physically work harder in the game than I ever have in my actual real life.
Yeah, it's wrong when you're neglecting your actual dishes to take water to virtual sheep.
Yeah. But yes, I have been in the same situation. I've been steeped in Red Dead Redemption 2. And I also have, like, I think I might have said this when we did other Westerns in the past, but I didn't come into Westerns until I was well into adulthood, because I was convinced I hated all of them. And I think it's because of that childhood experience of there being those John Wayne era Westerns on TV on weekends when you're a kid, and they're on all after the same film is on for the entire afternoon on ITV.
Yeah, I think BBC Two played a lot of just black and white cowboy movies.
Just
that
stuff where it would be something like 1993. You're sitting on your grandparents' couch and there's a John Wayne film on for 6 hours, and there's nothing else to do, so you just sort of zone out to it.
Sure.
And it's when you become, as a child, so bored that it is almost a sort of outside your body experience. And then that became what I associated Westerns with, until I finally, I don't remember what it was that triggered it specifically, but I decided I was going to give the whole genre a go. So I got a bunch of the sort of ones that are held up as the best. So that included stuff from the John Wayne era, like The Searchers or True Grit, also Spaghetti Westerns as well, the Dollars trilogy specifically.
Yeah. If Sergio made it, yeah, one of them, it's fine.
But, I watched the ones that are sort of really lauded and went, oh, yeah, this is as, like, worthy as any other genre of film, and I've just ignored it for my whole life. But this is, like, the spaghetti western subgenre isn't one I went down much beyond Sergio Leone.
Well, the thing with the genre is, he's probably the high water mark. And then with other Italian directors making westerns, because they're cheap and popular, they feel a bit cheap, and they feel, you know, thrown together.
I never realised how extensive the genre was. Like, well, I didn't realise how much...
It's big business,
just from sheer volume, there's going to be a few in there. This is one of the ones that I'd heard of Django, but I'd never heard of this.
Same.
So I didn't know what to expect, but I did, you know, I poked around a bit online just to see, and it seems to be held in pretty high regard. And I saw that Klaus Kinski was in it and thought, what? it seems like an odd casting choice for
He's a good villain, like, in this, and generally, because he's such a crazy, difficult man.
Yeah,
he's also a good villain with weird eyes, you know.
He's a good villain in real life, too,
sure.
If you ask Werner Herzog.
Yeah. So, you know, but, like, but he is in another Western, he's in, I think he's a sheriff in the film His Name is King, which is about... it's just a Western. It has a really good song that I think Tarantino put into Django Unchained. That's probably the best part of His Name is King is probably the song. His name is King! He has a horse! He has a brother! It's like that. It's great. And it tells the story of King, the sort of renegade. But anyway, Klaus Kaczynski is in that and is not used to as good... He's not utilized as well as he is in The Great Silence. But he's a weird actor. Abby, are you very aware of Klaus Kaczynski? It's very hard to say. Klaus Kaczynski, are you aware of him?
It's just Kinski. You're making it more difficult than it is.
More foreign sounding. Sorry. Are you aware of Klaus and his work? Have you seen anything else of his, Abby?
I'd heard of him before, but I'd never seen anything that he'd done. So I was quite curious about this.
Yeah, good on screen, difficult to work with, apparently.
Yeah, he's probably best known for the films he made with Herzog.
Like that one where he tries to get a big ship through the Amazon.
Yes.
That's the one I most know of.
Fitzcarraldo.
Yes. It should be called The Big Boat Goes Through the Amazon or something. But instead it's the guy's name or the boat's name.
He was also in he was the vampire in Herzog's version of Nosferatu.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's quite a famous role.
And he... just the perfect, terrifying person to turn into a monstrous vampire.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty good in that. Like, it's just... he's got these mad... The only other person I can think of as eyes like this is Steve Buscemi. And Steve Buscemi is more lovable than Klaus. So
he kind of reminds me of Willem Dafoe a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, like, it's partly about him, partly about Jean-Louis, who plays a guy called Silence. It's weird to name your child Silence, not knowing they're going to have their throat slit. And be muted.
I think his name's Gordon.
you don't think it's his birth name, Gordon?
Yeah,
Gordon Silence. Is it a surname?
Unless it's a surname.
No, yeah. So there's a guy. So there is a fellow who I don't know. The whole thing. Is a snow western a genre? Is that what you'd call it?
There are some westerns set in more sort of snowy climates, but it's definitely more rare than, you know, your typical sort of desert.
Yeah. Well, desert set western. Case in point, we did on the podcast another time. We did McCabe and Miss Miller, Mrs. Miller.
Oh, yeah.
Said it wrong again.
Yeah.
That again was like a, you know, snow based western. Again, a slightly different style western as well.
It's different from what people associate with westerns typically, but it's also the same example of the kind of extreme conditions that the people living in the US at the time would sort of have to survive through. Like when the desert is fucking hot and impossible to survive in unless you know what you're doing, and so are the colder parts of it during certain times of year where, like, you get lost and you just die because it's too cold to continue. And it's another way of sort of adding a lot of texture to something. Like, the environment becomes one of the characters.
Yeah, there's a lot of horses struggling to get through the snow.
Yeah, it did feel kind of bad for the horses in this film.
I mean, one of them, I guess, in character dies and is eaten by a pack of hungry outlaws. But we don't see this, but it's what the story has happened. Abby, you're usually quite sympathetic towards at least dogs and things. Did horse death set you off, or were you feeling like, oh, that's all right, I don't mind horses being killed?
Well, it's usually more to do with the sort of, I'm not sure if tone's the right word, but when dogs die in films, it's usually quite cynical. Like, oh, we want an emotional response. Let's kill a dog.
Yes.
Manipulative.
Mm. Whereas in this, it was like, oh, you're out in the snow. You could die. You need to survive. I guess you're a horse. It's like, I'm not comfortable, but I get it.
Yeah.
Horses are kind of monsters anyway. They are. They're these weird, tall, muscular things with giant human teeth. They're really weird.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to join in and say that horses are monsters. I will say it's arrogant of you to, like, as humans, we ride horses. One of the few animals we climb on and take us places. And you're like, they're monsters. These monstrous beasts.
I'm saying, as someone who has only ridden a horse a couple of times.
Yeah, they hit your mum, didn't they? He used to beat her up at night.
It's that kind of monster. It would psychologically torment just my mother.
Tap on the window whenever your dad was out to be like, "You man, I own you."
Look at these big teeth. But
these horseshoes ain't lucky for you, bitch. Sorry, I don't know. Too far.
I've only ridden a horse like a couple of times, but when you're like, especially when you aren't experienced with them, you realise, oh, this thing could fucking kill me at any moment.
Yeah, my dad has a really bad foot because a horse stamped on his toe while he was working, I guess, on a farm or something.
And now fucking he's... lesson.
Yeah, don't let a horse trample your foot. Or when you're in your 60s, you'd be like, oh, my foot really hurts now. Eventually it gets to you and you have arthritis and you're like, oh, this is bollocks. Anyway, let's focus on the film. It's essentially about three main characters, I guess, and then a host of side characters. It's sort of, there's like a, is it called Snow Hill, the main location they spend their time at?
Yeah.
But, so there's a moot, bounty killer, renegade, I don't know, like...
Yeah, well, he's a... Yeah, loco.
He is a bounty killer, loco, but Silence is a bounty killer, right? He kills bounty
killers. Yeah, he goes around and gets revenge for the people who have had someone killed by a bounty hunter.
Yeah, he's on his own personal quest. But yeah, so there's a silent guy who murders bounty killers or shoots their thumbs off or teaches them some kind of lesson. And then there's a bounty killer, which is what a term I'd not heard in any film except this. And it makes sense because it just implies, well, a bounty hunter might take them alive, but a bounty killer... A bounty killer definitely, you know, murders.
Yeah, he just kills them regardless.
Which, sensible business practice if the price is the same either way, right? You know?
I mean,
Why take the risk if you don't moralistically care?
The film even has a, you know, a closing text about it, but, like, it was a way that, especially back then, people would just use it as an excuse to just fucking murder as many people as they could and be like, yeah, well, I'm doing a job, innit? Pay it.
Yeah, there's a lot
less... Which
is
why Klaus Kinski is the perfect casting choice for that particular role, because he looks like someone who would happily go around just murdering people for money.
Yeah, but the idea with him and his character is he's not necessarily the leader of a pack of bounty hunters, but he socializes with them, and he is one, and, you know, he's a ruthless bounty killer who... you know, I guess he's hit an ore vein in this town of, like, oh shit, there's this guy putting bounties on everyone, and I could just mop them all up and just leave them in the snow anywhere. Like the world is my personal freezer, and I'll just keep my corpses on ice wherever I want. And he's raking in the cash that way. And then there's also a sheriff being sent out to this town. Reluctantly, I guess, he's not that interested in it, but is he's sort of a good, well-meaning sheriff. And this mustachioed sheriff is getting there just as... it's kind of a critical point where... I guess the important thing in Snow Hill is... There's a bunch of outlaws, they are called. But it's like a group of people who have some kind of... They have a bounty on them. They're like... Technically, they're bandits. But it seems like there's some backstory where... whatever they've done isn't that bad. And they're going to get pardoned. But they kind of... have to wait it out because there's a lot of bounty killers trying to cash in their heads.
I think they're also not to make too many of these connections, but they're kind of like Dutch's gang in Red Dead Redemption 2. Like they're one of those bands of people who are trying to sort of live their own way as the country at the time becomes more organized and becomes more of a sort of, you know, contained federal organization and government, as opposed to the sort of pockets of civilization that it was before.
Well, I'm not
like people still.
Yeah, I mean, in... go on.
I was just gonna say people still seeking that sort of independence or idea of, you know, being a free community of people, kind of thing.
I want to be free to live my life my way. I want to be able to steal from people and shoot them, and it be freedom. But like Abby, do you remember? Do we get clarity as to what these bandits have done? Do you recall them giving just the reason?
I don't recall anyone giving much of a reason for anything.
That is true. That's kind of. In a way, that it saves on needless exposition and backstory if everyone is sort of mysterious, isn't it?
I mean, I like that it's one of those films that it sort of feels like it's just dropped you into a situation, but there's enough going on, you feel like there's more happening, so it's not that characters are necessarily sort of shallow or not filled in, it's just the film hasn't gone to great pains to show you everything.
Yeah.
But you'd get a very distinct sense of, like, it's a lived-in world that you just for the period that you're watching the film, you're just sort of passing through it.
I like that about this film. I think that saves a lot of time, and it's sort of, we get it, so no problem, you know?
I think that's often, that's one of the things that is beneficial to a Western, because it makes sense in the context of when those films tend to be set. Like, people are always, like, a lot of people at that time were transient. Like, things would just shift and people would move on. Like, nothing, for a lot of people, nothing was very fixed.
Yeah, if there was a newspaper report, it would be new man in town.
Yeah.
What's he about?
And then the next week, oh, he's gone again.
Oh, he died.
Oh, he left and we'll probably never see him again because who the fuck knows where anyone is.
Yeah. Abby, did you like the fact that we don't get... I mean, we get some... we get a backstory eventually for Silence, the renegade, I'll call him, I guess. Did you like the fact that we just sort of plopped into this without much context and we sort of figure out what the who the good guys are and who the bad guys are?
It was... One of the problems I have is... It can work if you have a silent protagonist. But because he spent so much time alone, he didn't communicate with anyone, so then you don't really know what his... you don't know what he is. Like, oh, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he an anti-hero? What is he? I don't know, because he literally communicates with no one.
It does mean there are at least a lot of scenes where... So, like, the sheriff meets him. I mean, we're skipping over a bit here, but essentially when the sheriff meets Silence, this guy who, I guess he... To describe him, he has a coat with a horrible fur collar. It's just this...
Oh, yeah. I thought it was his hair at first.
Oh, it's like, what animal have you killed? It's got, like, just... Have you killed a furry spider? What's with this disgusting... fur tendrils, like, on your collar.
Yeah, it is very long. It's but just a person's hair.
Yeah, but he's, like, dressed in black. I guess there's, you know, obviously the title refers to both him. He's the Great Silence, because his name is, like, this legendary figure. He's, like, a mysterious sharpshooter, I guess, who kills bounty hunters or shoots their thumbs off. He's a really good shot, and he's a legend initially. And he is... He's known as Silence because he kills people and he brings Silence goes or blah, blah, blah. But
and
then
he's
also...
Mute.
And he's mute, yeah. He's mute. And then on top of that, the other meaning, I guess, is, you know, the Great Silence referring to the massive, quiet, white, snow-covered plains where everything's quiet. And then also, you know, an allegory for, like, the Grim Reaper or Death. And the fact that Death is the ultimate, like, Great Silence.
It's another use of... And spaghetti westerns in particular seem to do this a lot. Or it seems to be westerns or western-type films from other countries that do it, is having a main character who is a lot more of a deliberate archetype rather than a character. So the characters are the ones who are around the main character. The main character is there as, like, the template to... It's like the main character is the MacGuffin, but in sort of George Lucas-y, Steven Spielberg type terms. It's like having the Ark of the Covenant be the main character, and then that everything else is going on around them. Because that was what, you know, it was the same with Clint Eastwood in the Dollars trilogy, where he may or may not be the same person in all three of those films. He has a different name every time. He seems to be playing the same character, but there's nothing to suggest that he is or that it even matters. And you even get it in, like, the Mad Max movies after the first one, where, like, he barely speaks and he's just this sort of almost like a blank slate. And
yeah,
it goes even further in this because he doesn't talk.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's literally this idea of the romanticized legend of the West, this hero. Or sometimes it's an anti-hero, but, you know, this... I mean, he's very much an anti-hero because, you know, of how he behaves. But it's the idea of there's a legend rather than an actual person that you... It's not like you meant to believe this man is real. I mean, they not pretend... He's not a metaphor in the film. I mean, you know, you can interpret him as one, but he exists, he's in it. But, you know, he's an idea of a man rather than a person, in a sense. But, you know, he has a backstory, you know, we get a flashback showing that when he was a young boy, his dad was wanted, as he, you know, he had a bounty on him. His dad had a bounty on him, and some lawmen or someone came, or some bounty hunters came to get him from his house. And they asked him to surrender through the door. He would. he was willing to, and then they just burst in and killed him, and I possibly like were. Did they murder his wife or rape her or something?
Yeah, they kill both his parents and then they cut his throat so he won't tell anyone.
You know, why not just kill him then? I mean, that's too far to kill a child, but to mutilate a child, that's fine.
Yeah, to cut out his vocal cords. I'm not a monster.
Yeah. But, you know, so the...
No, I'm not a horse.
Yeah, so he gets his little cool neck scar and the reason why he's moot. He's not just being a dick. Although it does, in every scene, someone chats to him, they're like, oh, so, all right, mate, how's things? Why are you practicing shooting potatoes, are you? Oh, prick. What's your problem? Yeah. Oh, he can't talk. Like... Oh, I see. Why didn't you just say let me know or whatever?
You were there to explain it for him, Pauline, because he was just fucking standing there like a twat.
Yeah, he should have like a little notebook around his neck. Just I'm mute. Just
Pauline as well, the woman that he meets in Snow Hill, who wants revenge for her husband being killed by Loco. She was in the one of our previous movies that we did. She was in Repo Man.
Was she a receptionist or something? Was that right?
Possibly. All I remember about Repo Man is glowing green cars at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that we have such vivid memories. So it's a good piece of trivia. And I liked her in this, actually, come to think of it.
I was just going to say she was really good in this. She was very... in a. There's a lot of very heightened acting in spaghetti westerns. And along with a lot of the dubbed dialogue... It can be hard to have a grounded character, and she comes across as very genuine and human.
Yeah. Abby, did you find Pauline and a likeable? I mean, obviously she's an innocent who becomes a victim, but did you? I mean, there's an element of, oh, she's having sex with him now, oh, the sexy bum cheeks. But, like, did you think she was an interesting character? Or was it just exploiting, like, you know, what do you make of Pauline?
I didn't make much of her at all, really. I found these people all very difficult to engage with, to be perfectly honest. Because a lot of it just hinges on, oh, it's moody.
So you just, I think you just weren't in the mood for this kind of enigmatic western, is it? Or
I wasn't in the mood, but it does a lot of stuff that is just isn't my cup of tea. Well, first of all, the way it opens is just, I'm not one for bulky exposition, but I do like a little bit. But they were just straight away like, no, there's some guys, some of these guys are dead. Some of these guys are leaving. Right. What? I felt like I'd missed the start.
I think one of the things I would infer based on when before we started the podcast, that you find it hard to keep track of who's who because, oh, some men. Right, they're dead now. Okay. Wait, who killed them? Who's this guy now? Who are these people in this bar? Are they goodies or baddies? He's dead now. Wait, did we see him already? Did you have a lot of that going on or...?
Yeah, and the thing with it being cold and their costume, there's nothing wrong with their costume design per se, except they didn't try very hard to make people look different to each other.
Well, okay, so visually, the three main characters, I would say, do stand out. So you've got the black-clad Silence, and then Loco, in fairness, he is in black a lot, but he's got that horrible green scarf that he wears like under his hat, like an old lady.
Well, he's also Klaus Kinski. Like, yeah, as soon as you see his fucking insane face, and also his terrible haircut.
It's horrible. Like, it's just blonde hair, but with a haircut that sort of says, I have no style.
It's like a bowl cut, but with something under it to make it taller. Like, it's really fucking weird.
But he's a kind of, you know, he's dressed in black a lot. He's got like a high black hat, but they're sort of clothes-wise similar, but characteristically, like, Loco's much more smarmy-looking and the way it's how he behaves, so that makes him stand out, I guess. But then the sheriff is in, he's got a moustache and he's a bit older-looking, and he's got that weird, like, jumper that has big white stitches on it and makes it look like children in 8th grade have made it. and he's got his little star on, and it's just he just looks homemade. I felt the sheriff guy, but I mean, the bounty hunters were side characters that piled up on top of each other, and then because you've got a bunch of outlaw bandit people with bounties on their heads, they're all just people in hats covered in snow. So there is a bit like, what's going on, guys?
Part of the problem sometimes with the sort of the less remarkable spaghetti westerns specifically, again, I haven't really seen that many, but I guess part of the reason the Sergio Leone ones stand out, especially the later ones, is because they have a lot of flair, whereas this is, it's low budget, but it's also it feels deliberately quite muted. Like, it doesn't, this director has a very different style, and it's much more sort of low-key. But whenever you have all of these characters who have been dubbed by American actors, it always seems like all the male American actors are all trying to do the same voice for some reason. So it's really hard to tell who's talking.
Yeah, I think a big hurdle, actually, for this. And I got past it, but there's a big problem with the dub sounding like it's a 70s porno set, and everyone's just doing a really rank amateur job of doing, like, just voices that don't match, or I think we were all
That's
sort
the
of...
thing.
Go on.
The one thing that stuck out to me is just really wrong was when that one of the first guys went home to his, I can't remember if it was his wife or his mum, and there were two guys waiting for him.
Yeah.
Someone was talking and nobody's lips were moving.
Yeah.
That was just, what's happening? What's...
It always seems like everyone who isn't one of the main characters just does this voice of, I'm gonna talk like this. Everybody has to talk from really low down in their stomach, like they're tough. But it's clearly different actors but doing that voice, so everyone sounds vaguely the same.
There was a really inconsistent thing as well. The woman, the redhead, making changes.
Yeah.
She was fine for ages, and then very suddenly in her last scene, she was the most wooden human being alive. What happened?
I think what the other thing is, when it's not just dialogue, so okay, you've got a little bit of that, hey, you there, wait, who said that? hey, you there, playing cards, you're gonna die. No, but when it's not slightly off, when people aren't doing dialogue, the fucking sound effects on people either dying or, like, the guy eating the chicken. I mean, what was happening?
I was waiting until we would get to this. Charlie is the character's name, and I'm pretty sure the only reason I remember that is because how fucking viscerally disgusted I was by him eating that cooked chicken. And it was worse because I was wearing headphones, not even my usual over-ear headphones. I was wearing, like, expensive in-ear headphones. So him... fucking his chops on that chicken were right in my ear canals,
and it was probably like
inside you.
It was like,
like I was, and I know they were, he was obviously doing it on purpose to make you hate him because he gets shot moments later, and it was very satisfying. But like, it's the close up of, like, him pulling the chicken apart, and it's all, like, fatty and greasy, and then you just... Oh, and then I'm trying to imagine the actor in, a soundproof booth just making these noises into a microphone. just standing there just going...
Exactly. But there were little noises where you're like, what was that?
And he's talking at the same time, and he does that thing that you always do in ADR of this type. There's a little burp. Always is.
In fairness, right? In fairness, the voiceover was tremendous. But the guy eating the chicken was eating it like someone who'd never seen a chicken in his life. He was like, fair enough, you order a chicken, anyone who enjoy it. But obviously, let's not use a knife and fork. Let's pick it up and eat it from the side. And then when I have the leg bone, I'm going to gnaw on the top. Like, oh, I've got a nice chicken leg. Am I going to bite into the side like any human being would? Or gnaw the top of it and sort of pull bits off and just have greased up hands and just like... So I think it was a voice actor who hadn't eaten a chicken, and an actor who'd never seen a chicken before, because it was just, oh, it was insane.
You've skipped out the worst part.
What?
In between the and the burp, he wiped his nose on his arm. Amazing. And they did it so loudly.
But yeah. he had chicken grease on his hand, and he blew his nose into his hand or whatever, and wiped it on his fur coat, and it just... I mean,
little drink of the whiskey as well. So many little... And then, again, I can only see the actor standing in there with headphones on and a big microphone in front of him, just making these noises. It reminded me of... I don't know his name, the voice actor from the Witcher games talking about how weird it was to record sound effects for sex scenes in a video game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was... it works in the film, right? Because, essentially... Yeah, you know, this guy, like, they set up Loco and this guy. Did you say his name was Charlie?
I think, he's Charlie.
So, Loco and Charlie are... They established themselves as bounty killers early because, it's Pauline's husband, right? This is the first one, or no? That's the second. Oh fuck, I get confused. But essentially, there's an old lady who's tricked. Oh, that's right. So the people who live outside of Town Hill, that's in Swansea. So in Snow Hill, there's an outlaw bunch of people who are potentially gonna, you know, with time their bounties are gonna be removed and they might survive and not be killed. But they're living out there, they're surviving out in the wilderness because they're scared of getting killed, and they're perhaps also criminals. But so they're out there, and a few of them are giving up because times are getting real, real tough. You know, there's bounty killers coming, and you know, it's cold and there's no food. So a few of them decide to leave and go into the town, and one guy goes to his mum, I think. They say that she said, oh, I've got a lawyer here, and she sent a letter to him, and he gets back. Turns out the lawyer is Loco and another bounty killer called Charlie, and they just fucking shoot him and have manipulated the mum, I guess, to get him to come back so it's an easy kill. And so they're dicks, but then to really, like, when Silence turns up in the stagecoach and is in the town ready to dish out justice to all these bounty killer pricks, you know, it sets up, look at this prick, you want him dead, he is dead, lucky you. No, so like Silence, you're rooting for him automatically because you are so glad the chicken eating has stopped, right?
Yeah. I also like Silence's passive-aggressive way of taking people out. He winds them up to the point where they want to shoot him, and then he shoots them and it's self-defense.
It's a right dick move. Like,
yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, because, you know, essentially this is fair enough, this guy's a victim. So a bounty killer's, but murdered his parents, mutilated him and made him mute. So he's bought himself the most fanciest, expensive gun that he takes good care of.
Oh, the Mauser.
So yes, this Mauser, this fancy, sophisticated piece of technology for them back then, I guess. He has this automatic gun, which looks incongruous, I suppose, with the time period. We're used to sort of Schofield revolver type things. But, you know, he practices shooting his potatoes, and he's a crack shot, his old Silence. He's bloody quick. And, yeah, like you were saying, Jamie, he winds people up so they're annoyed and pull a gun on him, and then he shoots them because he's faster than them. And because he's faster than them, he always wins, or he always tries to win. And then if you do surrender and you're a bounty hunter, just to make sure you don't bounty hunt again, he shoots your thumbs off. So he's a vindictive asshole, which is good for someone who doesn't talk. His techniques include, like, holding the door open so there's a draft, flicking matchsticks into your drink, and generally staring at you like a knob.
I liked that scene where he tries to piss Loco off specifically, because I like his escalation of first throwing the match in, and then Loco takes it out, goes to drink it, so he throws his fucking cigar in it.
Yeah, and it even gets to the point where Loco realises, I mean, they've heard this Silence guy who goes around tricking bounty hunters and into shooting at him, Which sounds like a weird plan. But, you know, so he's like, oh, no, I'm not going to fucking fall for this. You're not going to fool me with your tricky Wild West rules where if someone tries to shoot you and you kill them, that's fine. They do that a lot in this film. There's a lot of, well, he tried to shoot me first, so I guess if, as long as they try to shoot first, and you, if you kill them, it doesn't matter. Whether it's a prostitute who may not shoot you or just someone who is just holding a gun as if they might shoot you, if you kill them and they had a gun, it's probably fine. It'll be, and that seems to be the rule of thumb, no pun intended. But yeah, like I liked the fact that Loco was like, no, I get my hands up, mate. Get my friend to take my gun belt off, and now I can fucking punch you in the face.
Which is, it's funny because in real life, if you did anything to set Klaus Kinski off even remotely, yeah, he would pull your head off.
Yeah, it would be like that time Christian Bale got annoyed with like someone fucking with some lighting, but 10 times worse. But like, you know, I did enjoy the scene, and I liked that it kind of made, like, Silence has seemed, because at the start they establish him by, he kills some bounty killers in the snow early on, and they show how quick a draw he is, and they also have, whoever's left surrenders and all this. So he's an intimidating figure, and then when Loco, like, has his number, suddenly, like, Silence seems more like a little boy again. Like, he has a kind of vulnerability then, where he looks like he's been outsmarted. But then, after they have a fight, it seems Silence can just twat you with a log through a wall. And that's fine, too. That's his other approach, is to just twat you with some wood.
It is interesting that the film sets up Silence as the typical mythic Western hero, but as the film goes on, it starts to shift. Like,
he becomes more human and vulnerable, doesn't he?
Yeah, and it's also interesting then that, spoilers, he just fucking dies and there's no heroic resolution for him.
Yeah, that's a big point that we're going to have to tackle properly. But I do think it was an interesting move to have someone be a legend and then turned all too mortal. And just have him, like, Clint Eastwood doesn't ever get that vulnerable in his films. Like, the fact is, when he gets, like, in the scene where this happens, Loco is kind of punched through a wall, and then Silence throws his gun to him, which he's had taken off him, and is once him, you know, you fucking quick draw on me and I'll kill you and I'll get what I want. But, the sheriff intervenes and stops Loco getting to the gun and arrests Loco for trying to shoot someone in the back, even though that's not, you know, he arrests Loco because he's a dick and the sheriff doesn't like him, and fair enough, he is a dick. But anyway, in this scene, basically, the resolution is, like, Loco's mates who he's playing poker with all, you know, pull their guns, and Silence manages to shoot them all really quickly, but gets shot himself, and from, you know, he's injured, and then he's going with Pauline back to her house, and he's basically resting up, and, you know, he's injured, and he gets more injured in the film, and he never really recovers from this moment on, which, you know, your enigmatic Western legendary figure would normally overcome all odds by the end, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you said you brought up Clint Eastwood, but in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, when Tuco fucking walks him through the desert, like, and he effectively cooks and dehydrates, but once he's rested up at that monastery, he fully recovers. There's no...
It's the power of God, though, isn't it? It's that's monks to the rescue.
Yes.
Look, Pauline doesn't have all the power of God Almighty. No, you're right. Like, you know, you can't be a legend if you're fallible, I suppose. Or at least, you know, you can't overcome these odds. Abby, did you gain any sympathy for Silence as a protagonist throughout the events? Like, because, you know, you might not feel too, you know, involved or whatever with the film, but did you find him an interesting character? What did you think of the story arc of Silence?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, it's that you don't get an insight into him at any point.
Flashback?
No, but I mean, like, how he thinks. You don't know how he thinks.
Well, it's the eyes, I think, is the idea.
because with him and the woman, you don't know if it's just, does he want to fuck her? Or that, does when, he actually like...
Sorry, the first time I watched it, I took the implication that he's a do-gooder and that he's for justice and saving the vulnerable. He is paid, like people, like essentially Pauline has heard of him and I guess sends a letter that we don't see to get him to, basically she's going to pay him to kill Loco because Loco basically, you know, shot, like there's a bounty on Pauline's husband and Loco fucking kills him once he surrenders because he's a dick. And so, you know, this is right up the Silence's alley. He loves killing bounty hunters who are dicks. And so he turns up, and there's a sense that, like, Paul, there's a whole story where, you know, she's going to sell her house to raise the money to the man that she hates. Blah. There's lots of story. It's worth seeing, and we're not going to go into every little detail. But I think the implication is he's a nice guy. But she basically says, look, I can't pay you the money, but I'll fuck you before or after you kill him. And then cut to where Silence was. He's already gone. He's like, the door's just closing from where he's left. So it seemed a little bit like he's a horn dog and he just wants to fuck her, so he's instantly going to go and do his job. But hey, I think the implication was, you know, he's a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, their relationship escalates probably too quickly.
She's a widow, and within... I'll put a bandage on you. Thanks for killing some of his friends. Actually, now that you're in this bandage, won't it work? It's kind of the payment. Won't it get... You know, the film can't go on forever. What do you want?
This might also just be a thing that, you know, this is just what happens with two very attractive-looking people, and I just have no idea. Like, frame of reference.
They have a look. There's a look. Some people could just look each other in the eyes and know it's on, and it's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, there is one. He does stay, like, the night in her loft before they fuck. Like, nothing happens the first night. And she just sort of surreptitiously gets into bed while he's up in the loft looking at her. But, Sorry, I don't know.
I was going to say about him, like, not having any insight into him. That is, you don't ever really get any beyond the flashback backstory that you get. That is it. But you do get the sense that there's something going on in it. Like, he looks like he's thinking about stuff all the time. And it's, I think that's just the, a compliment to, I can't remember the name of the actor, the guy who plays him.
Jean-Louis and then awkward blog name.
He has this interesting kind of sad face. Like he looks like he's mourning all the time. Well, it's hard to get charisma out of a silent performance. Like you have to sort of have that innately in you. Like if you see a silent protagonist in a film, or even a silent antagonist, and you kind of like you're trying to figure out what they're thinking. Like if you remade this and put like Mark Wahlberg in the role, God. He would just look like he's trying to figure out what's going on. Like
he'd look like a dog that's got peanut butter on the roof of his mouth, wouldn't he?
just that weird little open mouth frown that he does. Like he would just look like an idiot. He can't talk because he can't. Like he just can't. He doesn't have a concept of language. Whereas in this, it looks like it's something about. I don't know. I can't describe it, and I wouldn't say that it's necessarily brilliant because it's. I feel like the film doesn't make enough of him. Like it doesn't take enough of
it becomes the sheriff show at one point at least, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, like as small as the film is, I did find myself like I felt bad when the sheriff died.
Well, he may not have died depending on which ending you watch.
Fuck off.
We'll get to him. You felt bad, like so I think the difference here is Abby, perhaps you weren't enjoying trying to interpret the looks. It was falling short of charming you and being charismatic and telling you with his eyes and his body language. Like you maybe like weren't interpreting like, where me and Jay, it weren't interpreting quite what they wanted. And I think it is there, but you know it is up for debate how good a job is done. But I think the point of it is he's saying everything he's supposed to with a look. Occasionally he comes off like a bit of an arse who won't talk, but people, you know, they realise he can't talk.
I think that's probably what annoyed me more, actually. Not so much that, like, interpreting him was fine, but he was just so unhelpful.
Where people, yeah, he's not helping himself.
Yeah, they're talking to him and he's just like, he's not writing anything down. He's not just pointing at his mouth and going and shaking his head. He's literally doing nothing while people are speaking to him.
He does.
And someone else has him intervene.
In fairness, he does communicate to Pauline by writing in one of her books or a Bible or something the price.
Isn't that like 15 minutes from the end or something?
No. It's midway.
It's quite early on, but it is the only time he writes someone a fucking note.
Like, this, think about this, right? I think the reason for this is, and yes, you may think he's an arsehole, but his MO is, I wind people up so that they try and shoot me, then I kill her. Like, he kind of can't do anything else. He can't talk. All he does is go through life annoying people, shooting their thumbs off. The guy is kind of a dick, you know? But the thing that really makes him the hero, or an attempt at a hero, is when we come to the end, there's a lot of hostages. I want to talk about some of the points, but we're not going to go into every detail because it's a fairly straightforward film in many ways. But I don't want to go over every graphical little bit. But essentially, the big situation at the end, Loco has got all of the people with a bounty on their heads hostage in a bar.
Yeah, the establishing thing of that is the sheriff tells them, all you need to do is put some food out on the edge of the edge of town and the bandits will leave you alone. Like, they're not going to come
people.
And kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they go to do that, but in the meantime, Loco murders the sheriff and then goes back and tells all his bounty killer friends that they've got a potential to make a shitload of money on all these bandits. And they turn it into a trap.
Yeah, so yeah, it's beautifully bitter and twisted and perfect. But
also that we haven't talked about the fucking creepy shopkeeper with the beard who tries to fucking rape Pauline.
Yeah, I mean, in my head, I've got him bookmarked and the sheriff bookmarked because we haven't really talked about them. We've mainly been trying to figure out whether we like or dislike Silence. But you know, this end sequence where Silence kind of, I think, proves himself a hero. Pauline Pauline is sent by Loco and the other bounty killers to go get, like, they want to get Silence. He's been hiding out with Pauline and he's injured. Like, he's had his hand burnt by the whole rape thing we haven't discussed. But essentially, he is told, you know, don't go and save these people. They're dead anyway. He'll kill them and you. And Polly's exactly right. Loco will just kill everyone. You can't trust him. He doesn't want to duel. He says he wants to have a duel with you. But then Silence decides, you know, to man up. And he basically goes, despite not being, not, you know, sense would say don't do it. But he does the heroic thing and he tries to rescue these people and he ends up getting himself killed and he just gets, you know, cheated essentially because one of Loco's friends basically shoots him before they even get to the duel and, you know, he's like just murdered in the snow. And it's like, that's what makes Silence heroic rather than just an arsehole who winds people up by not explaining himself or writing things down, you know?
He also might just be illiterate considering it's 1898.
Well, his handwriting was terrible. I couldn't quite read the message. Well, nothing wrong with being illiterate. That's fine. You know, whatever. Does that not win you round, Abby? The fact that he was willing to actually man up and try and save these people when no one else could?
No, I didn't click with this film at any point.
I mean, that's a shame because we've got more to talk about. And you've given the game away. But let's talk about the sheriff a bit and let's talk about this mad shopkeeper. Because the mad shopkeeper is kind of the other real villain. Loco's your classic. He's a fucking... Look, Loco's MO is he'll kill you and he'll trick you. He'll constantly manipulate you. Yeah, and he'll be a smarmy, happy prick about it. Like, the whole time, he's... If he's not being arrested by the sheriff or being taken somewhere. Or he's always, I quite like you, Sheriff. You seem nice. I know you're arresting me and taking my money away. I think you're a good guy. He's like a fucking asshole about it.
Loco is, he's more the antagonist than he is the villain. Because there's an element of likability to him, partly in the performance. But he's also, like, he has...
He's funny and frustrating because, you know, he's following the letter of the law. Like, he's more, you know, he does murder people in cold blood, but he, you know, he can at least say, oh, they drew on me. Or, but mostly he's, you know, he is someone who's taking advantage of the system rather than doing anything illegal.
Yeah, and he has his own weird internal, like, moral compass. It's just pointing in the wrong direction. But the shopkeeper is the villain.
Sure.
Like, because he's just a fucking... He was there. He was one of the bounty hunters that killed Silence's parents, which is part of the reason that he wants Silence dead.
Because he shot his bloody thumb off, isn't it? And got a thumb, bastard.
But he's also fucking creeping on Pauline the whole time.
Yeah, he's got this, like, there's the shopkeeper is like, he's got glasses now that he's older, and he's got a funny little cap on, and he is the sort of, is he the Justice of the Peace or something in the town?
Yeah.
And they're without a sheriff at the start, and, you know, when the sheriff turns up and basically sizes everyone up instantly and is like, oh, Loco, you're a bit of a dick, and you're getting in jail as soon as I can put you there. And this shopkeeper guy's a fucking asshat. The sheriff tries to sort of be moralistic and put everyone in their place, but he does, you know, essentially, the shopkeeper, at the start of the film, has been putting bounties on people, sort of that to suit himself, really. And he's been, you know, he's taking advantage of all these bounty hunters who will just kill whoever there's a bounty on. So if you've legally put a bounty on someone for petty crimes, then, you know, he's basically he's his own government, isn't he? He's able to kill whoever he wants. And he's a rich shop owner, I guess, in terms of, you know, a small town. And so the fact he's an ex-bounty killer himself and he's a smarmy rapist that a lot of the other women in the town seem to hate, and, you know, he's a very dislikable guy. And at least I don't know, I think he's one of the few villains that gets to be killed, thankfully, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those... I like that this kind of film will throw in just an irredeemable character who's there just to give you some sort of catharsis to when they get shot, inevitably.
Yeah. Well, Abby, would you say maybe another reason you weren't that into it is because it's a film full of many villains? Or did you actually think the shopkeeper was maybe a more fleshed out and interesting villain?
It's not so much the manyness. It's that a lot of them were completely redundant.
Well, the henchmen certainly are. I guess Loco and the shopkeeper are there as legitimate characters, and then just a ragtag bunch of guys who will say things like, yeah, and ha ha ha. You know.
Mm. So I think that's it. It's that this film could have done with 5 people what it did with about 20.
Yeah, I think part of the thing is with the Italian-style Western, they love a body count. And I mean, the violence is not brilliant. So people get shot and there's no squib, there's not even blood all the time. You know, it's like sound effects and... You know, people diving on the floor. It's like children have choreographed it. I mean, it looks cool, but, like, you know, it's not realistic.
The bright red, like, paint type blood.
I mean, yeah, but that's what they're going with. They want a bit of violence. It's, you know, movies for men, isn't it, in a way? And maybe that's the problem. Is it's at a time where you made movies for men, and then the men have gone, yeah, cool, people were shot and stuff. We saw a woman's. The top of a woman's ass and stuff, and then you've come along and gone, I don't know, it's just all a bunch of fucking men in snowy hats fucking standing around getting shot or being shot or doing some shooting. I don't know, but
I mentioned earlier about that the idea of remaking it with Mark Wahlberg, but I thought if they did remake it, Ryan Gosling would be the perfect choice for this part, because it's basically become who he plays in films now.
Just Lars and the real girl style, where he's just, like, maybe Loco is, like, teasing him about his, like, sex doll girlfriend. He just goes mental on him.
I mean, I was thinking a Drive, but yeah.
Yeah, it's got a lot in common with that as well.
It maybe does, that's now that I'm thinking of it. Drive and Only God Forgives. Like, there's a similarity in both those main characters.
Maybe it's just, I find myself cutting it slack because I'm always fond of a quiet or silent protagonist. Even probably since my playing GTA 3 days, where your character doesn't say anything but just deals with arseholes and criminals all day, and you go and kill stuff and drive around. But you know, the shopkeeper I think is a good villain, and it's what's good about him is he is key to everything going wrong for all the good characters. Like Loco is doing what he does. That's who he is. He's a bad guy. He's a bounty killer. He's making money. He's enjoying himself doing it. And he's a dick. But the shopkeeper guy, he's the reason there's bounties on people. He's in charge of, he's like an upstanding citizen, sort of. But then he's, you know, a rapist and
I mean, he's sleazy, he's using, and awful. He's using the idea of being an upstanding citizen to just be a shit.
Yeah, he's totally arrogant. When the sheriff turns up, he's like, "You haven't heard of me? I thought someone had told you." And it's like, "No, I don't give a fuck, mate. Just a job in it. Literally, I've turned up and I'm just trying to sort out a load of old shit, so I don't care who you are. I hope you're not putting that corpse in the street, Loco. There's a fine if you leave the corpses out." Like, I just love how the sheriff is like, everything is like, just some, he's like a policeman from, like, normal times, where he's just like, just, who are these dicks? Can we just not, guys? And then everyone's like sarcastic. And even the thing I like with the sheriff is the ginger prostitute lady comes over and like pours him some coffee and stuff. And they're trying to flirt, and then Loco's in jail just mocking him and like bringing up the fact that she's popular all around the place and stuff. So I like the tension between the sheriff and Loco. And a big chunk of the film stops being about Silence and is about this sort of hard, worn out sheriff. The sheriff comes into town on a horse that is tired and cold and gives up. Some bandits eat it, and then he's even trying to help the bandits by, you know, making the town give them food so they don't come and kill everyone. And he's just this sheriff trying to do his job, and he's it properly and well by the letter of the law. And then Loco just hides guns and corpses everywhere, so he gets the better of him, shoots some ice and kills him. And it's like, fuck, I like this guy.
He shoots him by pretending to have a shit in the snow.
Which makes him the ultimate shit ever. Like, when Loco is mouthing off to the sheriff, like, the sheriff's taking him to a different jail and just taking him away from the town of problems. And so Loco just goes, "Oh, we should go across the ice here." And the sheriff's like, "I guess one way is as good as another." So, but then you don't realise, but Loco's trying to get him to go where he's hidden a weapon. Like, it's, and it's like, "Oh, we should stop here. I need to go, you know, number two or whatever." And so he could perfectly like catch the sheriff off guard. He's been unchained from the horse, and he could get his gun. You know, he shoots. And what I like as well, he shoots the ice, and the sheriff then doesn't have any bullets in him. So when they find the corpse in the summertime, well, he hasn't got any bullets in him. He could have just fallen in the ice, you know. So he's crafty. He knows that he can't get arrested for most of his murdering, and even when he's killing, you know, prostitutes, they like either shoot at his hat or, you know, are about to kill him anyway. So he's kind of covered from a legal standpoint by Wild West terms, you know.
He also wins in the end.
Yeah, this is the other thing. I think this is, you know, there's lots of other bits in it. It's worth checking out as far as I'm concerned. But I think the last point for us to talk about then is the ending. And there's a few of them, apparently. So the ending should hit you like a ton of bricks if you guys are anything like me, where, oh, so the bad guy has managed to get all of the people, all the small bounties together, so there'll be enough for all the, like, I guess that all the, look what his friends are going to share the bounties, which seems like it's going to be not that much if, you know, if there's all of them. I half expected Loco to kill his friends as well and just be like, "Now all the money is mine." But, you know, everyone's together, there's a big hostage situation, and then no one saves the day.
Yeah, you watch the person set up as the hero of the film get gunned down and then Pauline get gunned down on top of him.
Yeah.
And then they kill all their hostages anyway. I will say, the drama of the hostages being killed was taken away a little bit from them writhing around on the floor. Like you said, like children pretending to be shot when they're playing like cowboy games on the playground, where they're all just kind of going and like all, like fucking arching their backs and shit, but whatever. But it's still like, it got to that point and then he got Silence gets shot in the head.
Yeah.
And that was the point where I went, oh. And then Pauline got shot and died on top of him, and I went, oh.
Yeah, and then,
and
you
then
know,
it ended. And I went, fuck. That sucked the air out of the room.
Yeah, because I think while Loco and the Sheriff were away on their little chatty jaunt, where they sort of size each other up and figure out who's going to win, this is when the shopkeeper guy tries to rape Pauline, and so Silence, you know, fights back, and he gets his hand burnt by one of the dumb thugs, and he does, you know, he fights off and saves Pauline from being raped and kills the shopkeeper and his sort of thug henchman, but in the process has had his hand burnt and has burnt the face of this fat guy who's sort of holding him back. He does a really bad job. He burns Silence's hand and then kind of lets him go, forgetting that he'll be angry and violent while he's not looking.
Well, he's busy watching Pauline get like that. It's a nice sort of shorthand way to make you not feel bad for his face getting shoved in the coal by having him just stand there going as the shopkeeper's trying to stick it in.
Yeah. But yeah, so you know, the shopkeeper at least has a gruesome end, where his Silence kind of grabs a rifle and like shoots him upside down or something, like awkward with his other hand or something. Anyway, but the point is, you know, Silence injured and tries to come to the rescue but can't. And then the last moment is everyone's dead and Loco's like, yep, all good and legal as well. We'll come back.
Yeah.
We'll come back. He's never quick to take a corpse with him as well. He like loads up a stagecoach at one point. Well, he makes some stagecoach guys help him out for the price of a drink. But mostly he just has corpses everywhere that he has to come along and pick up before they thaw out. But they basically just fuck off, having killed everyone. And that's the ending. That's the proper ending. That's the ending you're supposed to get. But supposedly the producers were like, "Fuck me, we want to make a commercial hit, guys. Can we have like they were forced to do a couple of other endings." Did anyone see an alternate ending?
No, I only saw the bleak one. Apparently, the happy ending, where the sheriff somehow comes back.
That's
somehow
right.
Surviving, so, falling under a freezing lake.
I've seen the happy ending. It didn't have sound on it on my version. It was just like, oh, we filmed this as an alternate. So essentially, just as Loco is drawing his gun as if he might shoot Silence, the sheriff shoots him, and he's come back from nowhere. Presumably, he's emerged, climbed out of the ice. I mean, he might have, but then he probably just froze to death in a bush if he managed to get out of the
yeah.
lake. But he's seemingly warmed up enough, has come back, shoots Loco, and then him and Silence like do barrel rolls and like shoot all the bad guys eventually, and then it's revealed that Silence has a special like metal gauntlet on his hand that has helped him fire his gun. So it's a little implausible.
Yeah, that's shit. No,
I think there was also an alternate ending that was just. It's not quite so bad. Like, Loco has a change of heart and doesn't kill everyone, even though he's successfully killed Silence. Or, like, I think there might be a let's not murder all the bounties, but that doesn't fit with his character anyway. So
yeah,
you can't...
I like the thing. I mean, not like I appreciate the bleak ending. It does make it's nice to be shocked by a film from 1968.
Sure.
Especially a genre film where you have particular expectations. But what I also like is the on-screen message at the end of the film, where it basically goes, yeah, and this stuff happened all the time. It's shit, innit?
Yeah, sometimes whole towns were just massacred by pricks.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
It turns out...
No, like,
Turns out the capitalistic Western society where you pay people to kill people is a really bad idea. And it's awful, isn't it? It's really exploited to the max. Abby, what did you make of this ending? How did it grab you? Would you prefer one of the alternates?
Well, it's just because I didn't engage with it. It was just a relief.
So you said
like the idea of the hero getting shot and somebody watching it going, oh, thank fuck for that.
There can't be much more of the film left because everyone's dead. This must be the end. You seriously, you're just with Loco because like, oh, look, I'm glad someone has to die at the end. Fair, may as well be everyone.
Although I liked Silence, Loco is more charismatic and interesting as a whole. So
I expected Silence to die at the end, but having saved them with his fast shooting, maybe at least, you know, save the day, but not himself.
I would not have expected just that flat out bleakness.
So come on, Abby, you must think, you know, this is an interesting film for having the kind of different ending to every, like, it bucked a trend. You must admit that's like a shock ending to just go, so they're all fucked.
Yeah, that was like good. It's a bit of a risky move in the sense that some people will take that as a real fuck you.
I think that's what the producers were thinking. They were like,
yeah,
like, I can see that. It's the first time I can see the producer's point, because usually producers want to tamper in a film and make it worse. And it was really brave of the filmmakers to be like, no, we're going to do this weird anti... Like, it's almost like the thing that... The truth is, people die and it's sad. And we're going with that. And it's like, that never happens in these kind of films. Especially ones about legendary shootists.
Well,
but, you know, we can understand the producers being like, this will not sit right with people.
To bring it round again to the beginning of the discussion, I haven't gotten to the end of Red Dead Redemption 2 yet, so no spoilers, please. But the first Red Dead Redemption, which is a nine-year-old game, This isn't, you know, if this is a spoiler for you, sorry, but you know, whatever. Similarly, in that game, the main character that you've played for the entire game is gunned down on his own homestead, and there's nothing you can do to stop it from happening.
Yeah, but like, what would have happened if the people who made The Great Silence had made it is, you know, your protagonist would have been killed, and his wife and son would be killed.
True.
And, you know, you don't capture one of the baddies at the end. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's literally... The baddie would go free and no justice is served.
He does. The bad guy does get to live into old age. And
It was fairly old. We're not reviewing Red Dead Redemption, so...
The first one, by the way. That's not spoilers for two. I haven't got far enough yet to know specific spoilers. So.
I wonder if a game called Red Dead Redemption will have a death in it. but, you know, like... In regard to The Great Silence, what I personally would have done, just to tweak the ending, so Loco kills everyone, he kills everyone, and then everyone else is killed by him. Everyone is killed by him, everyone's killed. But, someone, like a new bounty hunter turns up in the town, and kills Loco, and steals his stack of corpses, and also, this is what I would have done, maybe you could tie the sheriff in a little bit before he died, but if a bounty is put on Loco, because he's essentially murdered a sheriff now, and so if Loco has a bounty on him, a bounty killer comes, kills him and his men, and adds Loco to the pile of corpses, and they get the whole bounty of the initial people, Loco, and any, like, you know, you just have a big cart of corpses with Loco being the top one. You know what I mean? That would have been... It's bleak, but it's also kind of sarcastically funny and a nice point.
Yeah,
about
that would put him. If the film overall also had more of a like some sense of humor running underneath it, because that's bleak, but also like darkly comedic.
I just
realized there's no humor in this film, which probably one of the things that hurts it.
Loco's kind of funny. Like, he kind of makes his friends laugh, but he kind of makes me laugh a little bit. Just his ways, the way he sarcastic, like, fact that he's like one step ahead of everyone a lot of the time. Like, so he does cut, he makes jokes to the sheriff, he makes fun of Silence. He is goaded successfully by Silence, and in a way, the bittersweet thing about it all is if the sheriff had not intervened, Silence would have just shot Loco and none of this would have gone wrong.
Yeah.
So the other sad element is the sheriff trying to do the job of the law and keep the rules in play fucks everyone over in the end. Like, him making, like, because the fact that he's the one who suggests put food at the edge of the town, it'll make the bandits go away. And the fact that he's trying to properly prosecute Loco for his crimes, that's what makes everyone die, is because he tried to do the fair thing. So it's an interesting piece about society and fairness and good and bad, and I guess the ugly as well, you know, in its own way. So I mean, you know, I personally really enjoyed the film. I'm a little bit disappointed, Abby, that I made you sit through something that you've just felt, you know,
physically ill.
But anyway, so I mean, I really liked this film. I'm sorry it wasn't like an all out hit. I didn't think, oh, you guys will fucking hate this with the Debbie Downer endings and bleak, manly western vibes. I genuinely like found it compelling and different. So I mean, in terms of a metaphor, I guess it's like, do you know, like old west hats. They're very practical, so they got a big rim, and you could kind of shape them. So you either have them like curve up so you can see where you're going, or you kind of you just curve them to fit your hand, like the top you sort of, and shape them to suit whatever your needs are. I feel like this is one of those hats where someone's boiled it and shaped it, but it's not like anyone else's hat. It's just this weird, everyone goes for the classic, you know, John Wayne style cowboy hat, or it's just like a nice indentation on top where your hand goes, some nice curled up rim, makes sense. And then this one's like just one of those weird bad guys who folds the peak in a weird way, and it's all wobbly and odd. And it's just this, it stands out from all the other normal western hats because some weird like gold digger guy is wearing it. Like, it's that kind of, okay, that's a choice, guys. What that, like, you know, it stands out in the bunch, and that's why I like it. And it's covered in snow. It's the fucked up wobbly western hat of a corpse. And I've dusted it off and gone, this is a pretty cool hat, guys. And everyone else is like, I think you should get a new hat, guy. I don't know. I'm not sure my metaphor makes anything sense. But it's the best I could do. I like the film. It's great. I actually genuinely think it's a really compelling film. The only hurdle, really, was this fucking dodgy, like, the dub and the fact that you're not quite sure who's talking sometimes. The cheapness of it sometimes is a problem. But if you get past that, I think it's really enjoyable. But you know, that's my metaphor anyway. It's a weird hat. Pretty good. Go on, Jamie, what have you got? What did you think of it? Is there anything you can say to metaphorically make a point?
I enjoyed it. I saw that because I rented it off Amazon, and I rented the standard def version. So it looked kind of scratchy, and the sound was, it's in mono, so it's not like, it hasn't got like a full fucking cinematic soundscape or anything. But there's a remastered version, which I would maybe be interested to watch.
The version I watched was pretty decent. It didn't look, like, you know, it looked dated, but it didn't look terrible.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good example of the spaghetti western genre, specifically outside of Sergio Leone. Like, it's a good example of how it could be done well and without necessarily having that prestige and you know, recognition.
And it's very it uses the snow element really well. Like, it doesn't, or the shaving form, yeah, as supposedly.
It's interesting that especially considering when it was made, that it does some stuff to subvert your expectations, and that it ends in such a ballsy, bleak way.
It's the type of, it's not only like a weird western hat, it's a fur hat, like, but it's a skunk. And like, it might be practical in some ways, but everyone's going to look at you weird, like they do in Red Dead Redemption 2, when you're wearing a fucking skunk hat, and you're like, mate, it's a skunk. What are you doing? It's warm. I like it. Sorry,
shut up about hats. Fuck fucking hell. It's just because he's bald and his head's cold. But, oh. But, I would say for me, the downsides of it, I felt like it dragged at, like, it's at, like, an hour and 45, and I feel stupid because this seems to be a common criticism for me, but I wish it was shorter.
TV shows.
Yeah, I think my attention span's just failing as I get older.
If it's, if it's longer than Father Ted episode, I'm not interested.
Well, no, that's not true, because, again, like, not, it seems unfair to compare them, but, like, something like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is almost 3 hours, like, just shy of 3 hours, it's 3 hours where you're engaged pretty much the whole time, whereas there were moments of this hour and 5 minutes where I found myself starting to sort of phase out. And I think it's just, it may be a pace issue. Like, I feel like it could be tighter, but at the same time, I imagine a lot of these films were a fucking struggle to make in the first place.
Yeah, if you've got a beginning, middle, and end, and it can fit together, well done, yeah, because you did it by
If it makes some narrative sense, it's going to stand out from a lot of other spaghetti westerns.
Yeah, they really, like His Name Is King is like, wait, are you missing? Did you not shoot enough scenes, guys? Some of this is really like, you need transitional moments, guys. What the fuck's happening?
But I think it's not for everyone. It is very, it's very obviously dated, and it doesn't quite have the flair of the better known examples of the genre that's going to grab people who are just into films. But I think if you already like westerns as a genre, and you're already used to, you know, certain expectations, and also expectations of spaghetti westerns specifically, it's definitely worth watching, and it's it is a really good example of how it can be done well and be done differently.
That's why it was a hit with me, because you just described me, and I was like, oh yeah, so yeah. I enjoyed it because I have all those things, all those caveats. Yes. I have those.
You might enjoy Rich, because he certainly stands out, but he's not for everyone. I would say it's because of the sort of low-key nature of it and the grittiness of it. It is like deliberately making beans the way, like, people around time would, especially if they were out in the wilderness, just like making some basic beans in a dirty pan that you cook over an open fire.
Maybe you don't even cook them, you just have them cold because you want to survive.
Just out of tin. But because you're hungry enough and it's cold, you're like, they do taste nice on their own. You know, there's better ways to eat them, but this is fine.
Yeah, I'll have some horse steak if there's any, but yeah, I can eat these beans. Okay, so it's begrudgingly accepting that beans are sustenance. This film...
making coffee outside in one of those like old carafe things that they would use. So like there's some grounds in it because there's no real way to throw it, and it's blisteringly hot and there's nothing to put in it.
But you know, it's a cup of coffee, yeah, for people who want a cup of coffee, so you can't complain. Sure, that's all right. Abby, not to leave you out in the cold, what do you want to say is your last thought and metaphor? I think Abby's silence says it all, really, doesn't it? and a little bit of like dodgy sound of that's fine. kind of.
Oh, I know. No, I don't.
What was your? Come on, let's get a fire burning. What were you going to say?
I can't put my finger on a good metaphor for it, because it's not that there was anything wrong with it per se. It's just, it wasn't for me.
It's like camping. I get it. No. I get the appeal, but I fucking don't like doing it.
The only thing I could do where people would assume that I'd like something is films, but I don't want to say another film as a metaphor for this film.
I'm actually interested to know what you were going to say now.
I think Drive is like this, because I love the film Drive, but other people have watched Drive and gone, oh, fucking hell. So, Mr. Enigma, what was the weird soundtrack about? And, oh, it wasn't really about anything. Why is he like just autistic man drives a car and hits people with a hammer or whatever?
Yeah, I really like Drive too. That's why I thought of Ryan Gosling for this.
Yeah. But then people are like, oh, I didn't get it. And it's like, well, it's a different temperament, I guess.
Well, it's just a bit like this week, a colleague from work. Like, she saw previously that I had loads of DVDs. So when she was having someone over, she was like, oh, can I borrow Harry Potter? I'm like, we don't have Harry Potter. We have all the other DVDs, but we don't like Harry Potter.
That's very, it's a very specific request. You have all the films. All the films ever made. Can I borrow this specific one?
We have got, if you saw the shelves, you'd be like, oh, you okay, what's a bubble obvious mainstream movie? Well, they're bound to have Harry Potter, aren't they? I'll ask if I could borrow it last minute. And it's like, oh, no, Soz, don't have that. But we do, too, what we do have, we have a copy of The Great Silence. But, so you're saying
so
it's...
So that's what this is like. It's when someone sort of like... When someone... It's either asked for or offered something perfectly reasonable and they've missed the mark, but you cannot explain to them why.
Yeah, so it's not just, that you don't hate, you don't hate Harry Potter necessarily, but you don't hate Westerns and you don't hate, like, you know, cold revenge movies or something. It's the bout of the film that isn't you. It's just, as it happens, no.
Mm. It's just some click.
And I think that's why we do expectations at the start of the show. I think sometimes you like a film not because it's good or bad, but because you're in the right frame of mind for it. And sometimes that like goes wrong. And you know, maybe it's because Abby didn't have the heating on enough. Maybe it's because she was thinking, maybe I've got a Harry Potter film that I need to watch and decide if it needs... I mean, are you a fan of Harry Potter? Do you genuinely think you should own it, or...
I only watched the first one. I thought it was okay.
And then didn't feel any... Like me, you're like, I don't think I need to watch it anymore now. Sorry, I wasn't the right age to read the books. Sorry, world. But that's all right. You don't have to love something, you know, just because someone else does.
This may be a coincidence, but I don't think Abby's been playing Red Dead Redemption 2 for the last 2 months.
Yeah, if you'd have had a story arc where you get to know the character Micah, you'd be like, Loco is definitely a Micah, and you're like, fucking prick. So, yeah, I think because me and Jamie have been living the life of ye oldie cowboys, and...
Also, not only that, but, like, the more sort of difficult, harrowing parts of it as well.
Yeah, so we're exactly teed up and ready for it, and we're prepped perfectly for this film. Whereas, you've just been, like, living your life watching Drag Race or something. You know, you're not really prepared for the ice-cold sadness that is The Great Silence.
But that is a great excuse to go back and watch Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been watching Drag Race, you're perfectly primed for a bit of Priscilla, so...
Well, actually, what I've been watching is World's Strongest Man.
Not enough burly men in this film. And the only fat guy gets his face burnt, so...
I said she'd watch The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, is there a film about just men lifting heavy things?
Santa with muscles.
There you go, perfect. Well, no, actually. Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, you could watch any Arnold Schwarzenegger film. Or Commando, he's always lifting things.
I need to watch Wreck-It Ralph 2. Maybe I should watch that.
Anyway, that is us trying to hash out The Great Silence. And, you know, the goodbye. Forgot what happened after you say goodbye, before you say goodbye. Just say goodbye, Rich. It's that easy.
Bye.
Bye.
Every time you get stuck like that, I think of the song by the Blind... The song... The version particularly by the blind opera singer of Time to Say Goodbye.
Time to say goodbye. Oh, but they know it's time to say goodbye, and I'm just... Does it work Do I? It's like when you try and push or pull a door when it's labelled and you do it wrong and you're like, oh fuck, I did it wrong again. That's always what happens with me. I'm just terrible at goodbyes and not in a romantic way.
You can't speak.
I've already fumbled over this goodbye. Right, goodbye for realties. Ta-ra, see you.
Bye.